check your tuning, we're recording.
Mr. K Super Show, a podcast for the discerning music and pop culture geek, hosted by Chris Karam. Welcome to Mr. K Super Show. I'm Chris Karam, aka Baby Lay Very Strange, and today we're going to talk about the band Heart. Yeah, you got that, huh? More to the point, we're going to talk about the original Heart. And to do that, we have a very special guest. But before I introduce him, I want to introduce my guest co-host for this very special episode. He is a Heart fan extraordinaire and an old friend dating back to our high school days. Russ Roy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you asking me to do this. This is a pleasure and an honor. And it's great to finally speak to you in person after 40-something years.
Yeah.
You know, sorry it took so long.
Well, hey, you know, that's the magic of Facebook, like we were talking about. Sometimes social media does work wonders. I mean, you know, I never thought I'd be sitting talking to Steve. I'm tipping my hat. Hold on. Let me dial it back a little. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we met in high school. We became friends and, you know, bonded over our mutual love of Heart and Led Zeppelin and other all the other great bands from that time period and before and after. But now to our special guest. This man is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. He is the original bass player for the rock band Heart. Steve Fawcett, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome you too. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, the pleasure is ours, sir. And I guess I want to kind of get straight to the point and just kind of start in a sort of chronological order. And what made you decide to become a musician? What was the turning point for you?
Well, there's, you know, it's not just one thing, but, you know, when I was a kid, my father, he was in the Merchant Marines and he would sail back and forth from Japan. And one time he brought home an acoustic guitar for his brother. And so we had it at our house for a while before his brother came and got it. So I got to look at that for a while. And I thought, wow, that's one of the neatest things I've ever seen. And the look of it, the smell of it, the sound of it, everything. And I was, you know, and I was just, you know, maybe 6 years old, 7 years old, but it was the most fascinating thing in the house at the time. And of course, I screwed around with it and broke a couple of strings.
Of course.
That's what kids do, right? Anyway, and then my parents had some really good friends that we'd go visit all the time, and they had one of those organs that had with the double keyboard top and, you know, layered keyboard, and they would like to sit and talk and drink, but, you know, to get the kids out of their hair, they say, "Hey, Steve, go sit, make some noise on the organ," you know. So I'd make some noise on the organ and they'd go, "Hey," and I could pick out all these melodies all the time and just knew what, you know, I just had a sense of what to do. And so I had fun doing that. And then when I was in the fourth grade, my music teacher, Mr. Eddie, who is kind of a hero of mine, he had assembled all these people and he said, "Hey, well, who wants to be in the band?" And, you know, I said, "Sure, I'll be in the band." And he went around the room and he gave this guy a clarinet and that guy a trombone and he gave me a trumpet. And he said, "Okay, I want everybody to take this home over the weekend, see if you can make any noise out of it, and see, and then we'll get together next week and see what happened." So I took it home and I had a lot of time on my hands or something anyway. So when we got back to Mr. Eddie's class, you know, in the next week, you know, he went around the room and said, "Okay, let's hear the violin, you know, squeakity squeak," and the clarinet did some honks and squeaks, and, you know, trombone guy just, you know, womp, 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 you know, whatever. Yeah. And he came to me and I played the Star Spangled Banner on the trumpet, and he went, "What?" So, that was my introduction to being in the, fourth grade band. And I played the trumpet in the fourth and fifth and sixth grade, but then, you know, I thought to myself, well, a trumpet's cool, but it's kind of a square instrument. You know, kid think, you know, they wanted to be something hip. So I wanted to wear tight jeans and play a guitar. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Anyway, so I knew I could, I was, I could pick myself, pick up an instrument and make some pleasant noises out of it. So then junior high comes along, and all of a sudden, my family moved from one part of town to another, and I was just making friends in my new part of town. And I was riding over to my friend's house, and at the time I had had a little transistor radio taped to the handlebars of my bicycle.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And, you know, you're very inventive. I mean, they didn't have all the cool devices back then like we do now. But anyway, so I think I taped it up with black electrical tape. So it really looked weird. So anyway, so I'm going down, I'm just leisurely going down the road to see my friend. And all of a sudden this song comes on the radio, and it was the Beatles, "For Me to You."
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God. And I was listening to it. I went, who, now what's this group? The Beatles? And they did that. The harmonies, the guitars, everything was just, I was just blowing me away. And I just stopped paying attention. And I was, all of a sudden I was almost in the ditch. Because wow. I was going down a little hill, and I, oh, what? And then all of a sudden, so anyway, I pulled myself out of the danger zone and got back on the road. And then I went to my friend's house and kind of forgot about it for a while. But I'm in my head, I thought, oh, it's the Beatles, Beatles, you know? So right. I looked up, I tried, you know, I, then I went home and listened to the radio and some more, and they were just coming out then. So they didn't play them like every hour on the hour, or, you know, five times an hour like they did after that. But anyway, so I started learning about the Beatles. And of course, Paul McCartney was my favorite Beatle, because he was, I just liked him, and he played bass. And I thought, wow, you know, bass, I love the way he plays bass, and bass sounds cool. So I thought, I'm going to get a bass. And so I started talking about bass all the time. I said, damn, bass, guitar, I mean, Beatles, music, you know. And he got tired of me talking about it. And he said, okay, one day we were driving around. He goes, hey, want to stop at the music store? I'm going to rent you a bass and see what happens. I went, sure, okay. So we went there, and we we got a little bass and a little amp, and it was pretty neat little setup. And of course, he thought, well, you know, Steve's going to take this home. He's going to screw around with it for a couple of weeks, and it's going to sit in the corner for the next 3 months and get dusty and whatever. Anyway, so once I got here to my house, I mean, you could not take that thing out of my hands. I was playing all the time, listening to the radio, trying to learn songs, trying to learn everything I could about what was, you know, the bass. And from then on, and the rest is history.
Yes, that sure is. Oh, it is.
So Raj and I, when you rented, it was 3 months. So after the 3 months, you went back and we went to turn it back in. And they said, well, you know, if you buy something right now, the rental fee will apply towards the price of the new stuff you want. So my dad goes, well, I suppose that'd be a good way to look at it. So I rented I bought a bass and I bought an amp. And the next thing you knew, I was in a band playing with some friends that lived, you know, a couple miles away. And then, you know, when you're in a band, I mean, some of the people that you play with, you can tell they're really into it, and they're going to, you know, they're not just, you know, using it as a hobby or whatever. They're mm-hmm. serious about it. And then other bands, other people just, you know, you can tell they're not that serious. So you keep changing bands until you find people that are super serious. So I got myself in a band called Benedict Arnold and the Traitors. Pretty cool, huh? And we played quite a bit around town here. And then that band kind of broke up, and Roger and I had both been playing for a few years on our own. You know, he had his band, I had my band. And we got together one day when we were walking home from school, and we came to my parents' house. We were talking some more, and we said, okay, we're starting a band. And we shook on it, and we said, and we called it the Army, like the Army of Music or whatever. Uh-huh. And we shook hands. We said, okay, we're gonna stick together and keep this going until we make it big. Because that's all we'd been talking about since junior high when we met, when we were in the same home room in the eighth grade. You know, Fisher, Fawson, so we were in the same home room. And
that would be Roger Fisher and, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, Roger Fisher, yeah.
Yep, the original hard guitarist.
The original guitarist, yes. And then we had a band, we called it The Army, and we had a friend down the street who sang and played guitar and keyboards. And Roger had a friend who played the drums. And we started rehearsing and playing. And next thing you know, we're playing out, and you know, people are starting to think we're good. And we were, you know, fairly serious musicians, and we were fairly serious about trying to make a good show and a good showing wherever we played. So we started to get popular. And then the Army kind of was around for about a year, and we got the booking agents that were booking us were saying, well, you know, we'd like to book you down in Tacoma, which is close to JBLM, which is the military base down there. But I don't think we could, their clientele would like to go see a band that's called the Army. So if you guys could find another name, that'd be great. So we said, you know, then we, through a friend of my girlfriend at the time, he suggested, well, there's this book called Tales of the Wide Heart by, can't remember his name right now. Anyway, and we thought, hey, White Heart, that'd be a good name, because there's another band that was popular at the time, Steppenwolf, that had got their name from a novel. So we thought that'd be pretty cool. So then we changed our name to White Heart, and we started playing around, and we continued on the path of getting more popular and people liking this and everything. And then and that was around for about a year, and then people kept saying, well, what's a White Heart, you know? and we say, well, it's a book by, you know, Huxley, I think is the author's name. And then we were talking, and we thought, well, why don't we just shorten it to Heart? And then we start, Roger and I were brainstorming about Heart, you know, and Heart has a lot of different connotations. And when you play music, I mean, you play from your heart, and, you know, and on and on and on about Heart. And so Heart actually turned out to be a pretty catchy name. And we weren't the Heart or whatever, like just Heart.
Right, right. Sure.
So then we played around for another year as Heart. And then the other two original guys, the singer and the drummer, they both decided not to play with us anymore, because Roger and I were, we were pretty annoying because had so much ambition and drive. And I don't know if you've ever been around people like that, but they can be annoying if you're not as ambitious and driven.
Sure, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And he's got a lot of energy. Yeah. Yeah.
So then, you know, then we had some other members, and we did some other things. And but we kept growing the brand. So then we had like a 6-piece band, and Roger and I were kind of, you know, we were the leaders, and we did decide what was going to happen. And then, you know, of course, the other four people got annoyed with that after a while. So then Roger and I were off on our own, just the two of us with, you know, we had a bunch of debt from getting equipment and PA systems and lights and all that kind of stuff. And we didn't have a band, so we were kind of stuck. So we put an ad in the paper, in the local paper, and it was the paper came out of Bellevue, and one of the first people to answer the ad was Ann Wilson.
Oh yes,
wow.
So we put an ad in the paper for a singer, a drummer, and a guitar player. And so when we got a hold of Ann, she said, well, I'm a girl singer. We have a boy singer, his name is Gary Humphreys, a drummer, and another guitar player. And we said, great, let's rehearse. So we went to the drummer's house in Bellevue, and we had a rehearsal, and everybody went, yeah, this is going to work. And so we all wanted to go out and play. So we just said, let's do it. So we learned, enough material to do four sets.
Oh yeah.
That's the way it was back then. You played four sets a night, or five, sometimes five. And then we got a hold of the booking agents and said, hey, we're ready to go. And they, first place we played was we traveled across the state of Washington from Seattle area to Richland, Washington, which is in the east, let's see, it'd be the southeastern part of Washington state. And that was our first gig, called the Town Crier. And, up until then, we'd only met at the rehearsal place, but now we were all in the same hotel room together. And that's where we got to know Ann and the rest of the band. And then from there, we played for the next 6 months. We played every place we could. We played in, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington State, all around, the northwest part of the United States. And in one of those gigs, Roger's older brother, Mike, who had left America because he was protesting the Vietnam War, and he was supposed to get drafted, but if he wasn't around, they couldn't draft him. So he went to Canada, and we were playing Bellingham, which is near the Washington Canadian border, and he snuck down and saw us, and him and Ann started a relationship. And so we finished out the rest of the 1971, that we finished out that year. We played up until the middle of December, and then we all took Christmas break off. And after Christmas, it was decided that, Ann wanted to move to Vancouver to be with Mike, because that was her boyfriend at the time. And Roger and I thought, what the heck? Let's do a change of scene that could really energize the band and all that kind of stuff. And besides, at that time, America was in the Vietnam War. And there's a kind of a famous thing that happened in Washington State. Everybody was moving out because Boeing was a big employer in town, but they were laying people off like crazy because, and America was spending all of its extra money on trying to wage the Vietnam War. And we thought, economically, it just was not happening in the Seattle area. And that the famous billboard they had was huge. They had them all over town. Like somebody last one out, turned off the lights because the people were just leaving Washington, Seattle area like crazy. So we left too. We turned off the lights and went to British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia. We emigrated up there. And, thankfully the Canadian government accepted all of us as immigrants. And we went up there, we got a drummer and a keyboard player, and we started the band back up. and started playing around Vancouver, and it didn't take long before we were one of the most popular bands in the Vancouver area. And we did that for about 3 years. And after the 3 years, we came to the attention of Mushroom Records and Mike Flicker. And we did a demo for them, and they said, sure, yeah, that sounds good. Well, do you guys want to make an album? And of course, we said yes. And that album turned out to be Dreamboat Annie.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing. All week long, I've been kind of immersing myself in the classic Heart catalog. So I started, you know, I went from point A to point B and listened to all those amazing songs. And you realize, wow, from the get-go, you know, you had Crazy on You and Magic Man and, you know, the title track. And I'm thinking, wow, right off the bat, you guys were just, you know, hitting all the marks. I mean, just, you know, you guys were obviously ready, fueled, and, you know, very ambitious, obviously, as
yeah.
You've been saying.
Yeah.
And you know, we continued on playing clubs and being a cover band when we first got to Vancouver, and we got really popular playing, you know, Led Zeppelin medley. We do covers of Queen and Deep Purple, and so we were a fairly energetic band, and people really loved us up there. And so, like I said, every night you play 4 or 5 sets. So when you do that for 2 or 3 years, you hone your craft. You get really good at, you know, being able to turn it on and just do your show every night, you know. And then once we got in the studio, we had been, you know, playing so much, so many hours playing all the time that the studio, I mean, we could do what the producer asked of us. So, and we did that, and he kept saying, well, you know, you better play this right, because you're going to be listening to it for the rest of your life. And I thought to myself, okay, that'd be great if this happened, but you know.
Mm. Yeah, who knows at the time, right?
And the very first song I recorded for the album Dreamboat Annie was Magic Man. And Magic Man, it turns out to be one of the highest rated radio songs ever. And you know what that means is they, you know, they, of course, record companies, they spend a lot of money investigating all this kind of stuff.
Hmm.
But a high rated radio song is if it comes on the air, people stay tuned to it. They don't switch to another station. When it comes on, they listen to the whole thing all the way through. And that was Magic Man. And, you know, and then we did Crazy on You, which was great. And the rest of the album had some awesome stuff on it. And Flicker was a great producer. And what we played, we recorded onto a 16-track machine. And when you have only 16 tracks, you have to, like, part of the lead vocal track during the guitar solo would become the guitar solo, or the guitar solo would be on another track and the lead vocal track would be the tambourine.
Right.
So, you know, you had to really be creative and inventive to try to get all these instruments in play on the album. So, and Flicker was, you know, he came from Los Angeles, and him and Howard had immigrated to Canada around the same time that Roger Mike and or Roger Ann and I had. So,
and that would be Howard Leese, correct?
Yeah, Howard Leese, yes. And we met them, and you know, and then Howard was a studio musician with Mike up in at Mushroom Records, and he did some really nice stuff on the album. And we thought, well, now, and then once we got slated to go out on tour with, you know, backing up the album, we thought, well, you know, the best person to do those parts that Howard did would be Howard. Mm-hmm. So we asked Howard to join the band. And earlier that summer is when we met Mike, and then we asked Mike DeRozier to be in the band too. And of course, Nancy had been in the band for a while because she was Ann's sister. So she was kind of a given that someday she would, if she wanted to, be in the band.
Mm.
So that was it. That was our lineup. Ann and Nancy, DeRozier, Lease, Fisher and Fossum.
Wow.
And obviously that's the classic lineup that set you guys on the path to become one of the, you know, big rock bands of all time. I mean, you know, you were talking about Magic Man. That's an evergreen. That's still a song that gets played to this day on classic rock radio.
Yeah.
You know, Barracuda.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you listen to classic radio, you hear it all the time. More than that, too. I mean, you hear Straight On. You hear, you know, Kick It Out. You hear every once in a while, you hear Mistral Wind.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a different scene back when we first made it, because everybody, it was album rock back then.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then over the years, it turned into singles, you know, and
yeah.
I really love the music and the vibe that came out of the, you know, the 60s and 70s. And all the bands that I loved from that era, those eras, you know, I still love them today.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You were more of a prog rock in those earlier years, too. I'm looking at an old set list from Oil Can Harry's on December 31st, wow. 1974.
Look at that guy.
Right.
December 31st, did you say?
Yeah, December 31st, 1974. Right. So here's the track list, right? Can't You Hear Me Knocking, which I would love to hear that.
Yes.
Come On. There was a Hocus Pocus funk instrumental, Maggie May, Lord in Black, I'm Coming, Sailing the Wind, You Need a Man, Moody Blues Medley, Siberian Katru.
Wow.
Main Stage, which is an amazing prog rock instrumental that Hart did, mostly instrumental. There was a little bit of vocal, but amazing flute solo and guitar work in that song. There's a song called E What? He'll Understand, and Sing Child, which was actually, you know, something that wound up on Dreamboat Annie, which is also a phenomenal song. That got some radio airplay as well, and I think it was a B-side to the Dreamboat Annie single, the title single. Yeah.
Heart by Heart. Just learned we're going to do a snippet of Sing Child in our set.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. So who's going to do the flute?
Well, I want Lizzie to simulate the flute on the keyboards, but for some reason she's balking at that because I don't know.
Well, maybe you could do the trumpet.
Yeah, there you go.
If I could play I could use this hand for the trumpet and this hand for the bass. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, you got to multitask in today's society.
Yeah.
So going back through the timeline, we've got October 67. You and Roger shake hands and do the Army. 1 year later, October 68 is White Heart. October 69, Change to Heart. August 1971, Anne joins and they become Hocus Pocus. Early 72, they move to Canada. April of 72, they rename themselves Heart. 1974, Nancy joins. And in 75, the recording for Dreamboat Annie begins. And they replace John Hannah and Brian Johnstone with Howard Lees and Mike DeRozier. So just to recap for those listening, and Anne's boyfriend was Michael Fisher. There was a lot of Michaels around this band, Michael Flicker being the band's producer. Yeah. Michael Fisher, being Roger Fisher's brother, was with Anne. Nancy teams up with Roger Fisher as a couple. Then we have Michael DeRozier. So lots of Mikes.
Yes. And then Howard's middle name is Michael.
Well, there you go.
And right. my middle name is Michael.
So it's a question why the band just wasn't called Michael at one point. Well, I guess woman out if you called it Michael, I guess.
Okay, well, we're going to get in that time machine. We're going back. We're going to rename it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, I think probably a common misconception, and certainly one of mine up till maybe 20 years ago on Behind the Music, was that, you know, okay, here's Hart, Ann and Nancy are there, and there you go. But Hart was an all-male band in the very beginning.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Ann was actually the first female musician that Roger and I played with. There's another girl that claims she played with us in the early days, but that's not. She never played with us. She never played with the Hart.
That's a Wikipedia faux pas, isn't it? You guys never even met this woman, right?
Yeah. And I can't. She has a name, but I don't remember it. And if I did remember it, I wouldn't say it.
And then another couple of songs, Love the One You're With and Stormy Monday Blues, were also in that set from Hocus Pocus. But then we get to, you know, in continuing with the timeline, we get to 1979 and Roger exits the group. But between that, you've got Dreamboat Annie, Little Queen, Magazine, Dog and Butterfly. All four albums at one time were on the Billboard charts for like 2 years or more. That's pretty amazing. So, you know, that's kind of like record business history, but also, speaking of record business history, was the issue that happened with the Magazine album being, you know, finished and released without your consent. That would be kind of a cool thing to talk about for a little bit.
Yeah, because I mean, I think part of that, as I understand it, was born out of the fact that Mushroom Records undertook a very shady marketing campaign for Dreamboat Annie, in which they, you know, as Ann Wilson put it, implied that they were sister lesbian lovers, which, you know, I can imagine they had to be livid about. And but obviously, Steve, you can probably tell the story a hell of a lot better than us.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the issue that Ann and Nancy had about that, what the marketing campaign that they had, which, I mean, there's several ways you could take it. They took it that way. But, I mean, it's almost preposterous to think that sisters would be lesbian lovers. Never heard of that before. Or sense. I mean, obviously it must be a thing somewhere, but I can't imagine that that it's something that happens.
Well, I imagine Behind the Music probably wanted to play that up because it probably sounded a lot more sensational, and they can kind of say up next, you know, because, you know, Behind the Music was a formula show where every, you know, commercial break, up next, you know, this and that. And
yeah, well, you know, It worked at the time, the outrage that Ann and Essie felt, they felt it. So, you know, it.
Yeah.
Well, and at the same time, we were having trouble. I mean, we signed with Mushroom Records, and they were, you know, and we kept hearing like, you know, so, okay, so we finished the album in 70, summer, fall of 75, got it mixed. It started getting popular after the first of the year in 1976. So we started touring seriously in March of 1976. And during 1976, say about maybe in June or July, it was Dreamboat Annie was gold in Canada. And by, you know, and shortly after that, it was gold in America. And then once you're gold, it kind of mushrooms like a snowball, kind of grows like a snowball. So we were platinum within a few months after that. And the point I was trying to make was that Mushroom Records was not coming forth with the kind of payments that, you know, spelled out in the contract. And then at that same time, they came out with that weird marketing campaign that upset Ann and Nancy. So we thought, well, I mean, what do you do? Because they were kind of being I don't know why they were holding back the money. I mean, it didn't make sense to anybody. You know, if you have a double platinum album, you take your profits and then you take the money that's owed the band and you pay them. That's the way it works. That's the way it's supposed to work. But anyway, it wasn't coming that, it wasn't working that way. So we decided to move on. And at the same time, since we'd had so much success, of course, other record companies were courting us and seeing if they could, sign us to their label. And so we kind of looked at our contract with Mushroom and it looked like we had a way out of it. We exercised that option. Mushroom didn't agree with that option. And so they had all these. So while we were touring in 1976, we would go out for a few weeks, maybe a month, play, open up for people all over America and Canada. And we come home and we think, you know, we all tired and everything. We go, oh God, it's really tiring. And then a couple of days later, we get a call from the record company. Hey, we booked the studio. Come on down and we're going to record some more songs. So that ended up being, you know, like Magazine, Heartless, Devil Delight. There's another one that we recorded in there.
Hear Song. And Without You by Badfinger.
Without You. I don't even, I can't remember. But anyway, so we had, you know, four or five songs in the can ready to go. And as a promotion for Heart, we did a live show at a club here in Seattle. And they brought a big recording van there and they recorded the whole thing, you know, pretty professionally. And, and we were recording it for a possible release at some point. So, and the Mushroom had the tapes from that we did, you know, that were slated for the Magazine album. And plus they had the live cuts over here. So when we exercised our option to get out of the contract that they did not agree with, they took the songs that they had and mixed them and made an album and called it Magazine. So when they released that, of course, we were outraged. And because at the same time, we were recording Little Queen that we wanted to release on our new record company, which was Portrait, which is an affiliate of Columbia Records at the time. And so I don't know how this worked out, but our lawyers must have been pretty good because they got an injunction against Mushroom releasing that album. So they had to recall all the vinyl that they'd already shipped out. They had to recall it all back. And if you can get a hold of one of those copies, that's something cool.
I've got two.
I have a digital copy myself that I think somebody had sourced from probably a vinyl LP somewhere in my archive of stuff.
Yes. And I never told any of the people in Heart, but, or in the whole situation, but I had found one too. So I have one.
There you go.
And no one's known. I've never admitted that till now. So no, anyway,
that's an exclusive on the show, folks.
Yeah.
And part of the injunction said that we would release Little Queen as technically our second album, but actually it was our third album. But we released Little Queen with, of course, that had Barracuda on it. So it became very popular. And then during that time, when we had time off, we would get the tapes, the Mushroom tapes, and we remixed all those songs and had our own version of Magazine, which of course Mushroom kept their portion of the rights and all that kind of stuff too. And so that became our third album, which, you know, I mean, Magazine is a fine album in its own right. I just wish that we could have the vision for Magazine was more like the vision of Dreamboat Annie, where every song was kind of interrelated and
Yeah.
Wouldn't have had all that live material that would ended up being on there, but at the same time. But it would have been cool to finish that concept up, but we never did. And magazine, you know, I mean, it is what it is. And there's some good songs on there. So,
you know, Heartless is a Stone Cold classic as far as, you know, the original Heart catalog goes. So it certainly yielded, you know, one big hit, obviously.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Heart by Heart plays Heartless.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Right. That is a cool song. Yeah. Well, the original concept for Magazine, which was to be the second album. So like Heart sort of became this band with two sophomore albums, but the original concept was to be sort of like a magazine spread. And I guess the songs would be kind of like the articles, and there was to be maybe have Ann or Nancy or both on the cover or something. Unfortunately, that concept just kind of never happened.
No, and it never came to fruition, or whatever that word is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's this bootleg out there called Secret Heart Illustrated. You might have heard of it. And that's just what they did with that bootleg, is they kind of, you know, completed that concept, or they formatted this bootleg live album from 1976 in exactly that way, where the songs are listed like, the Rover is actually on there. And so they're listed almost in the way that a magazine cover has the article titles and then a little blurb about the article, you know. So the Rover is like, lonely girl gets, swept away by the Rover or something like that. So I could see where, that bootleg actually kind of, in a way, was a little bit of what the original concept of Magazine was.
You could be right. Yeah.
You know, speaking of Little Queen, one of the things I loved about the original Heart band was the fact that you guys could certainly rock with the best of them, but you had something equally as important, in my view, is that you grooved. And the song Little Queen exemplifies that. That's one of my all-time favorite Heart songs, because when I'm in the car and that song comes on, I'm lap drumming, I'm doing fills on my, steering wheel. And, the Mass State Troopers kind of pull me over and say, "Hey, slow down, buddy." No. But I'm also doing that middle-aged white guy head bob thing in response to the groove as I'm driving along. And you can't help it. Like if I was at a show, I did see your show last year up here in Concord at the Capitol Center. But if you guys had done Little Queen, I would have been like, I would have got up and boogied. I mean, it inspires you to do that. And that's, like I said, that's one of the great things about that band. You and Michael DeRozier just really lock in and propel, these songs to, I think, a certain level.
Well, that, when I met Mike, we talked a lot about our philosophy of how the drums and the bass should work together. And apparently we agreed.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. I mean, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you will. I mean, fortunately, obviously, you guys had a very intuitive approach, because here it is, 50 some odd years later, and you're still doing it together, playing it Heart by Heart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fantastic story. And I mean, I've considered myself one lucky bass player to be able to play with Mike, on a regular basis.
That whole band, the six, I mean, I always, I tend to refer to the original lineup of the band as the one that plays on the first record. So obviously that six person Heart lineup is just, there's a magical thing about it.
It's the magic. It's the chemistry. It's the, charisma, all that kind of stuff. And that's what makes people fall in love with bands. Mm-hmm. And some people get it. Some, like, I think Mick Jagger gets it, that the chemistry and charisma, it's got to be there for people to continue to want to, be with fans of the band. And of course Rush understood that, and they lineup forever, and
ZZ Top. Yeah. Also the producer too, I think, has a lot to do with that chemistry and that sound that lineup had a unique sound that was never ever duplicated again.
No.
Unfortunately. But you know, Mike Flicker being the steady all through, I think right into Dog and Butterfly from the beginning, then we had Dog and Butterfly, then we had Bebe Lestrange and the Greatest Hits, and then the Private Audition.
Yeah, Private Audition was our first attempt without Mike. And quite frankly, I mean, it wasn't my choice to do it without Mike. And by that time, the choice, I mean, we were all equal, except some people were more equal than others.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Because I do remember when Private Audition came out, it's like, oh, good, Hart's got a new album out, the single This Man Is Mine was on the radio. But to my ears, I much preferred Cities Burning, which was the album rock track that they were kind of playing at that on those stations. And, you know, no sooner does it come out than it's like, well, wait a minute. Michael DeRozier and Steve Fosner, what happened, you know? And I'm kind of jumping ahead here because I was going to ask you about Roger Fisher. But since we're talking about Private Audition, Steve, why don't you, you know, tell us what exactly led to you and Michael leaving after the recording of that record?
Okay, well, you know, when you're a popular band and you understand kind of what makes you popular, what people want to come and see you do. And, you know, if you think about Magic Man, The Crazy on You, The Barracuda, you know, Love Alive, Even It Up, Bebe Lestrange, you know, and that's kind of this up-tempo driving, you know, come see the band type songs. And for Private Audition, Anna Nancy kind of went a totally different direction. I mean, of course, Cities Burning would, you know, rocks really, really hard. And, but the rest of the album was more, you know, was a different direction for what we, you know, what Mike and I thought Hart should be doing. Mm-hmm. And we voiced our concern and we were dismissed as, you know, traitors, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's how that happened.
Yeah, it was a different sound for sure. And, you know, it did fall short in the new rock or new wave of the 80s coming in. And of course, you know, with the success of Michael Jackson's Thriller, of course, Epic couldn't think of anything else. But you know, you had these people coming in and all the, like, pop really became king in the 80s. So like that album just didn't have that. You know, it was a cool concept. They were presenting the band in different kind of formats or genres. You know, there was the hard rock Cities Burning, there was the Motown This Man Is Mine, there was the kind of new wave sort of sound of the Situation, and you know, the folk sound of Hey Darlin' Darlin', you know. So it was kind of a cool way to just kind of, you know, audition, so to speak, the band in different formats that way, even with little blurbs between songs, like saying, you know, how are you? You can start anytime. Like, he's the cigar chomping, you know, auditioner. So it was a cool concept, but it unfortunately it did kind of, you know, not really hold up well.
No. Yeah. Cause we, you know, of course we see the statements for album sales and plays and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Private Audition is way, way down the list as far as anything that almost probably at the bottom of any album that Hart ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't resonate like Dog and Butterfly or, you know, Little Queen or, you know, certainly Dreamboat Annie. But I'd like to backtrack just a little bit to a couple of things. The first and foremost being, what led to Roger Fisher's departure from the group? There's obviously been reported as an onstage incident, but I want to kind of get your perspective, Steve, because you were obviously there.
Well, yeah. Well, Roger and Nancy were an item, right, for a few years in there. And I think Nancy sort of changed her mind on that whole situation. And I don't know, there's probably a lot of intricacies that we don't know or understand, you know, that Roger and Nancy would not talk about. But anyway, they parted company. And at that time, for some reason, Nancy thought it was a good idea to hook up with Mike DeRozier, who was in in the same band, which was, you know, and it was kind of weird, kind of a strange way to, you know, proceed, in my opinion.
Well, not if you're in Fleetwood Mac, you know.
Yeah.
I had to throw that in, but, sorry.
Well, that was, you know, I mean, it didn't bode well for Fleetwood Mac either.
No, it didn't.
So of course, Raj was, I mean, the first thing that happens when you get let go is you want to apologize for whatever you think you did, and then you want this person to take you back. Well, that was not going to happen. And Raj had a hard time dealing with it. And then when he lost his connection with Nancy and Anne, who were kind of focusing his energy and his playing abilities and his creative artistic contributions, they were focusing it towards the songs and being an ensemble playing together, which, you know, Howard and Mike and I understood in spades, and Roger understood it in the beginning, but then once that him and Nancy split up, then Roger's creativity, he thought he could just be creativity on, you know, squared. So anyway, so being in the studio, it was really hard because, you know, we'd work on something all day long and everybody would have their parts and it would have a certain groove and a certain thing. And then the next day, we'd get to the studio and Roger would have completely changed his part. And it was impossible to get things done when somebody does that. So after a while, it was like, geez, you know. And then plus him and his whole situation with Nancy and Mike was just unattainable, really. Is it unattainable or unattainable? Anyway.
whatever works.
You know what I mean?
Most definitely. I've followed the story to a certain degree, and last night to kind of, I guess, research, I did watch Behind the Music, you know, which is probably 25 years old at this point, but obviously, you know, some of the wounds might have been still fresh for Roger. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And it was hard. And, it, you know, and then, of course, that live situation with him and Nancy in the dressing room, you know, and it was, you know, it was just a horrible, horrible vibe that happened. And, you know, people just thought, you know, how can we go on with this happening all the time? So, I mean, it was the next obvious thing was, you know, we didn't want to move on without Roger, but it was almost impossible to continue with him the way he was acting and performing.
I remember the day I got on the bus after school. I had just finally got Bebe Lestrange in my hands. And in those days, we have no internet. We just know there's a new Heart album coming through the fan club. And I remember getting on that bus to go home, you know, city bus. And now I'm opening that album and I'm like flipping that thing back and forth. Where's Roger? Right. This is the first time I find out when I get the album in my hand. And it was really a huge disappointment.
Yeah.
You know, really. Yeah.
I think a lot of people felt that way. But if you listen to the album, I mean, the tracks hold up pretty well.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Five of us.
Yeah. Even it up. I mean, that's the song with the Tower of Power Horns. Am I correct?
Even it up.
When you're in that league, you can get the best of the best, and that was a great single. But Steve, I wanted to ask you, I'm going to pick out a little obscurity here, and I hopefully you can share a few memories about it. On the Greatest Hits Live double album, there is this one little track on the live album. It's a studio track called hit single, which is this weird little oral montage of some comedy. You guys are just kind of goofing around. What led to the creation of that? I'm really kind of curious.
Well, of course, you know, we were all big Beatle fans, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if you recall Number 9.
Okay, now I get it. Yep.
So that was their answer to Number 9. And then what they kept, Ann and Nancy kept hearing from our manager, Ken Kinnear at the time, and the record company and the producer, Mike Flicker, was, why don't you guys try to write a hit single?
Okay. Yeah.
So they were rebelling against, you know, because to them, why would we purposely sit down and try to write a hit single?
Uh-huh.
You know, we're just going to write the music that comes out of our minds and that's going to be a hit single.
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, there's plenty of artists that go, well, I have this song, but if I do this and this and this to it, it's going to be a lot more appealing than if I do this and this and this to it, you know, so.
Mm. That was a great package. Live. So you've got the hits on one album and live tracks on the other, like incredible live tracks on the other. But what a lot of people don't know is the album concept itself, the cover of the album was also very cool in yes. that each band member was representing an album up to that date. LaStrange, behind that was Nancy as Dog and Butterfly. Then we had Howard as Queen, Michael as Magazine, and kind of like the legal, with all the legal battles, looking kind of like an attorney with a briefcase. And then Steve Greenboat Andy with the tour jacket and the chains, because there's also that story about that kind of greasy promo guy or somebody like that Barracuda was written about. So that was a very cool concept to have.
You got it perfectly.
What's great about it too is that it kind of flew in the face of what most bands would have done. Most bands would have either put out a double live album or a greatest hits, you know, which was kind of the convention at the time. Whereas you guys kind of like, okay, here are the hits and here's some live stuff with some, you know, kind of obscure studio stuff, some rare stuff, some newly recorded stuff. I mean, the version of Tell It Like It is excellent. The video, I love the video for that. And for someone like me who, you know, had heard a couple of songs on the radio, it was a perfect introduction. It was well-timed because that was my freshman year. I just met Russ who, you know, like I said, you should have had him on commission back then, because if I needed anything to push me in that direction, it was him. I probably would have bought it anyway, but it didn't hurt that he would talk about the band almost incessantly, you know?
Yeah. But I was I was kind of like a big PR guy, like there behind the scenes, but trust me, they paid me back in spades in entertainment and, you know, and now in friendship today. So it's definitely, you know, something I'm sharing.
I remember hearing your stories from back then, you know, you telling me about how you and your girlfriend at the time, Sue, had, you know, talked to somebody in the organization, you were involved with the fan club. And, you know, back then I never would have thought some 40 odd years later, we'd be talking like this to, you know, to Steve and having this kind of retro discussion about, you know, all things hard in the early days, obviously the era up till including, you know, 82, which is, you know, it's the magic of the internet that kind of makes this happen, but it's also Russ's fandom. Because when I asked Russ, I just said, hey, let's talk about Heart. Want me to bring Steve on? Well, if you insist, you know.
Yeah. No, you can't keep him off. But see this little transistor radio here? This is one that my grandmother had given me as a gift. I can't remember if it was a birthday or Christmas. This little transistor radio is where I discovered Heart. It was Barracuda on an AM radio station, WRKO out of Boston.
Yes, absolutely. And,
and late at night, I would sit there and wait for it to come on while I'm supposed to be sleeping and just wait for Barracuda to come on the radio.
Awesome. Yeah, my transistor radio had the little leather cover like yours did.
Yeah.
It was like an aqua green.
Ah, psychedelic.
Yeah.
I didn't tape mine to the bicycle handlebar, so that was genius.
Yeah, like, I kind of wish I still had mine, but I'm sure mom tossed it somewhere along the line.
That's like an early version of the iPod or Walkman or you know.
When I'm in my car, I have the entire Heart catalog on my iPod. You know, I can just put on Heart and hit random and, you know, get whatever songs I want. It's, you know, who would have thought, Russ, you know, 40 years ago, you'd have a device like that where you could just put a band's entire catalog in one little device and, you know, have it with you wherever you go. It's amazing.
Right. So going back to like the timeline too. So now we're in the 80s and, you know, Steve and Mike have exited the band and then they have this big kind of resurgence on a more kind of mainstream and commercial level, which was what the 80s was. Pop was king, and you know, it wasn't serving anyone or satisfying the record industry anymore that you had like one or two hits and that your album was platinum. Now they wanted five hits and, you know, mega platinum and yeah, you know, and that's just how records were being made then. But I've heard or read somewhere that once we get to the 1993 Desire Walks On album that Mark Andes left. And was there a time that you were actually invited to play or to tour with Heart for the Desire Walks On album?
No,
really. That's not true. Okay.
Well, Ann had one time we were at a club and Ann mentioned, hey, maybe we could do some stuff together, but it never came to, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Heart wasn't the only band that fell victim, I guess, that Cheap Trick and Aerosmith were two other big examples of groups had fallen from the charts. And, the corporations, you know, stepped in. They got the A&R guys. They got the song gurus. And all of a sudden, you've got these bands having these big hits again. But to my point of view, at a cost, because you're kind of losing some of what the original band brought to the table. But that's just the way it was. And obviously all those groups did well. But, you know, like I said earlier, late 80s Heart did not have that same groove rhythm section that propelled the original group. And I like some of the songs, but I can't say that I really do prefer the original era just because of the interplay between the six of you and even the five of you, you know, in the last couple of records you did together.
Yeah. And with Heart by Heart, we actually do a couple of the 80s songs.
Yeah, I was surprised because I went to see you guys about almost a year ago at the Capitol Center here in Concord, New Hampshire. And I expected that you were just going to do, you know, stuff from 76 to 82. You know, you open with Cook with Fire. I'm like, okay, this is legit. They're opening with a deep cut. This is not, I mean, you could open with Barracuda, which would have been perfectly fine, but okay. And then you did Alone, and I'm like, whoa, this is a pleasant surprise, because that was obviously a big hit for Ann and Nancy in the late 80s, but I had no idea that you guys performed songs, you know, from the late 80s or, you know, the era that you weren't a part of.
Yeah, well, we decided that actually Alone was the very first song that Summer ever learned by heart.
Wow.
Up until that point, I mean, her big idol was Whitney Houston, and she never really followed Anne at all up until she started doing Alone as a karaoke song, and she would win contests and stuff like that. You know how that works. And then through that, she got invited to join a different Heart tribute band in Seattle. And through that Heart tribute band, that's how I, Roger and I met her because we were doing a party and we were going to do three songs. And we heard that there was this singer out there that could pull these songs off. And that was Summer. And that's where we met her. And that's where I met Summer. And then after that, Summer and I became friends. And that friendship turned into, you know, got deeper and deeper. And then it turned into a romance after that. Mm. And we've been married up on February 21st of last week. That was our 7-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Wow. Which we spent in the happiest place on earth, Disneyland.
We go there every year.
We go there every year in February.
Nice.
When I saw Heart by Heart, one of the things I really thought was very charming was the banter between you and Samara on stage. And that was when I became aware that, you know, you were married to her. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess you can't have a band named Heart by Heart without having at least two people in the band involved in some kind of a role.
Oh, yeah.
Got to be some kind of a rule like that you have in your corporate structure.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've always, you know, and I guess I didn't learn my lesson from what happened.
Do we ever learn, Steve, about these things?
No, love conquers all.
Absolutely.
And so far, you know, it's a lot of work being in a marriage, as you may, as most people understand. Summer and I, we deeply care for each other, and we have a lot of respect for each other, and we love each other, and it's we have a lot of fun together, and her family and my family all get along really well, so it's really nice.
Yeah. For the listeners who don't know, Heart by Heart is a spin-off band of Heart. So now we've got the two entities, which, you know, when your favorite band changes out members, you know, it's, as they say in a divorce, it's always the kids who suffer. It's the fans who suffer. But, you know, I think the fans are rejoicing because they've got these two entities now, you know, and you can, you know, Heart's on hiatus now, and you know, so we've got Heart by Heart that we can still get out and see, you know, cranking out the great Heart songs that we all know and love. And you guys do a nice full set, career spanning set, and everything is done in the original format. They don't change anything like the Wilsons have done lately, as they've abbreviated Magic Man, or they've sped up some of those songs to kind of fit with the times and stuff. Right. And you got to bring them in their original
form. Slowed them down.
Well, right. When I saw Heart 10 years ago, the first and only time, when they did Alone, they did it as like an acoustic ballad. And I'm kind of like, well, it's good, but I would kind of like to hear it with the original arrangement and the original format with the full band, which ironically I got to see when I saw Heart by Heart. So it's kind of like, okay, well, now I'm getting to hear it, the full band arrangement. Not that it was bad. It was perfectly fine. They did it well, but you know, I'm kind of one of those people. If I'm seeing a band for the first time, I kind of want them to stick close as I can to the original arrangement. Yeah.
Well, that's what we've discovered with Heart by Heart, is that you don't trigger that nostalgia if you change everything around. The nostalgia comes when you play the song as people remember it. And that's our goal in Heart by Heart, is to not make it sound like the studio, but play it as if it was an actual concert that happened in the late 70s and early 80s.
And yeah,
absolutely. And I walked out of that show thinking, wow, I finally got to see, you know, Heart's original songs performed by the original rhythm section with a great, you know, group of musicians and a singer who, you know, because of course I'm looking at her and thinking, okay, can this, you know, can she pull off the vocals? And she did it extremely well.
That girl's got chops.
What's that?
Yeah, she's got the chops to be able to handle the songs.
I think you have to be to try and go on stage and sing those songs, because those songs, like we've said, they're iconic, they're classic, and you know, classic rock fans, especially the general public, wants to go to a show like that and say, oh wow, that was good, and it was performed like, you know, the original key, the original arrangement. So I think, you know, you do the fans a great service by doing what you do and keeping the Heart music alive, especially now where, like Russ said, Heart is kind of on a hiatus. Things are a little questionable at this point.
The hiatus is permanent, in my opinion. I mean, Ann and Nancy, the rift between them is so deep.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah, for them to get back together is almost seems impossible. I mean, you can never say never, but isn't that a song by Heart?
Never. Yes, very, very big hit. Very big hit in the late 80s. Yes, yeah, very big hit. Obviously, it was all over the radio, but yeah, never. Well, you know, never.
You know, for them to get back together would really require a great, huge change in attitudes on both sides.
Well, you know, speaking of that, there's a rumor going around that Ann Wilson is supposedly trying to engineer some kind of a Big Heart reunion and get everybody back together. Is there any truth to that? Or
that was very true, extremely true. But Ann and Nancy couldn't agree on the parameters, and us guys, we really didn't agree on the parameters either. We didn't want it just to be a one-off thing that happened, and you know, then everybody goes their own way. We wanted it to be, you know, at least last a couple months where we did some bigger shows and different shows and recorded more than just one night, so that you had a choice of tracks to choose from to put on the CD. And then if they were going to film it, then there'd be a choice of songs from different arenas or venues that would be available to for the DVD.
Yeah, that's really
cool. It would have been really cool. The whole 50-year thing really didn't make sense to a lot of people because it's not 50 years. It was, but you know, it's close. So,
right. And I have a couple more questions for you, Steve, before we let you go. Very important questions to my way of thinking. The first one being, what is your favorite Heart album and why?
Well, for me personally, I love Dreamboat Annie because at that point in time, we just come off being a club band. And when you're a club band, it's all for one and one for all. And it was the first time we'd worked with Mike Flicker as a producer. So he was looked upon as, you know, like we're going to follow, you know, not follow so much as we're going to listen to his advice. And he had some great advice, and he had, you know, and he really has a great set of ears, and he knew his studio and his equipment like we knew our band and our songs. So when that came together, it really snowballed into something great. And at that point, I had a lot more responsibilities as far as, I would write out the chords and the structure for Howard to compose the string parts to. And I would give Howard the sheets of the chord structures and stuff so he could be easier for him to make up his guitar parts and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that was, to me, that's our favorite album. And of course, the song, you know, your first foray into being well known, it really means a lot to me that, you know, that album did well and it's still doing well. And people still love those songs. And
absolutely,
we still love playing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea to date? I think the last I knew, which was decades ago, that it was over 4 million, but which is what, quadruple platinum?
Yeah.
So do you have any idea what that is now today? It's got to be a lot more.
Yeah, it has to. But the whole keeping track of that album sales is kind of, it's hard to do nowadays because people don't, they just download songs now.
Right.
They download, stream songs. They don't, whole album is rare, you know, nowadays for people to pick up and own. And
I'm old school. I still buy CDs.
Yeah, same here.
I do too. I do a lot of iTunes type stuff, but I'm one of those guys that if I like a song, I'll download that song, and if the album has other songs I like, I'll do a couple more of those. But usually, I mean, every album has songs you really, really like, and some songs you kind of like, and then some songs that don't strike a chord within you, So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of songs, what is your favorite Heart song of all time and why?
Well, it's the very first song I recorded, Dreamboat Annie. Magic Man.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense. Sure. That, and that's, you couldn't pick a better song. That's one of the all time classic Heart songs. Like we said before, it's an evergreen where it's still being played today on classic rock stations, you know, all over the place and on the internet and Spotify, I'm sure, you know, and Pandora and all these other places.
Yeah. I mean, Heart. I mean, very seldom would ever do a concert and not play Magic Man. There's right. no tribute band that would go out there, and any band worth their socks, there's no way they would not play Magic Man.
Yeah.
And of course, Heart by Heart, Magic Man is a staple of our set, and we do it all the time. And I have a whole story I tell about it, but that could be for another time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Russ, do you have any other questions or anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I know we're winding down, so I wanted to know, I love the name Heart by Heart. Like, that is just so genius. Who came up with that?
Okay, so when Summer and I first got together, of course, when we met, it was because we played Heart songs together.
Uh-huh.
And then over the course of the summer, we, like I said, we became friends and we got closer. And then by Christmas of 2008, we were a couple. And when we would hang out together, I would be playing the bass and she would, you know, be doing something, cooking or putting on her makeup or whatever. And she would sing along to what I was playing, or she would start a song and I'd play along with what she was singing. And so I hadn't played Heart music at all, hardly, for, you know, 5-6 years before that, because I was done with the whole thing. Uh-huh. And during that time, I became a mountaineer. I was climbing mountains all over Washington State. And I'm surprised I didn't die. There's plenty of times where I could have. But anyway, so I made it through that. So we would play together and then people heard about it. So we would, and you know, we'd go to a friend's house for dinner and they'd sit and there'd be a bass sitting around and they'd say, "Hey, can you guys play a song?" So we, you know, and I think our big song back then was Dog Butterfly and maybe Magic Man. And, you know, we started learning more and more together, you know, so we could play them together when we did these dinner parties or, you know, we go to Summer's parents' house for dinner. And after dinner, he'd say, "Whoa, play some songs." So we would. And then we got some calls from some bistros and some jam nights and all that kind of stuff that, you know, because they heard about it and say, "Hey, why don't you guys come and play a couple of your songs?" So, and you know, we didn't know what to call ourselves. So we came, you know, we started thinking about all of the ways we could name our band. And, you know, you go on the internet, you type it in, already taken. You know, because we wanted to get the, you know, something that wasn't taken. And then one day Summer went, "Well, how about Heart by Heart? Because we're my heart and your heart are together and we're playing together. So, and Heart by Heart also means like, it implies the emotional connection too." So,
yeah.
So we called our duo Heart by Heart. Well, we got a call from a guy in Anchorage, a friend that I'd known for years. And he had a Dwight Yoakam show up in Anchorage and he wanted an opener. And he thought, well, we'll get those guys up here to open up for him. Uh-huh. And we thought, you know, and we accepted, but then we got to thinking and says, well, doing just a bass and vocal duo might be a little light to open up a rock show with. So we asked Mike DeRozier, and I don't know if you've ever heard of Randy Hansen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Randy Hansen is a Hendrix artist, and he's very popular in his own right in that
out of department. Seattle. Yeah.
But, and Randy was, you know, I'd known Randy, and Mike and I had known Randy since the Heart days when he'd open up for Heart back. And he opened up for us in Hawaii and other places too. But so we'd known him for years and years and years, and he, you know, we were friends with him, and he agreed. So we put together a 45-minute Heart cover set. And, you know, a couple of weeks out from the show, we got a call and he said, "Well, Dwight pulled out of the show because they didn't understand that, you know, they had to drive all their equipment from America through Canada up into Alaska, and then it just went like, it's too much trouble. So they pulled out of the show, but we had a band. So, and we enjoyed playing together. So we got to, you know, we rehearse every once in a while. And then some other friends of ours that Summer and I knew through our co-ed softball team. And one of the mothers was a breast cancer survivor. So, and she was putting on a little benefit for Susan G. Komen awareness, breast cancer awareness. And they said, hey, did you guys want to play? And we said, sure. So we went there and we donated some, I donated some heart memorabilia and we played a set and we had a lot of people there and we actually made quite a bit of money for the benefit. And at that benefit, there were some fans that had heard about it and they came there and that those fans talked to booking agents around town and they say, hey, these guys are pretty good, you know? And next thing you know, we're getting a call from the booking agents saying, hey, do you guys want to do this? You want to do that? So that's how it started. And then once you have a band, you make a website. And of course, the website is available all over the world. People on the East Coast said, hey, Mike DeRozier and Steve Fossen are playing together in this band called Heart by Heart. And, you know, and next thing you know, we're in Baltimore playing gigs and it just took off from there.
Yeah. Now, did you have Bob Rivers with you for a bit on keyboards?
Yes, like Bob Rivers.
This is the Bob Rivers.
The Bob Rivers, yes. Bob Rivers
called the Christmas...
Charity song guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been a friend. He was our friend for many, many years, and we did some interviews with him. And then we'd asked Bob to come and join us and play keyboards, you know, as a guest musician every once in a while. And then, and at the same one around that same time is when we met Lizzie, and of course we knew we at one point we're going to have to get another girl to sing the harmonies and everything else. And there was some other candidates in the mix, but their scheduling and all and their attitudes and not attitude, but just their whole lifestyle just did not gel with what Heart by Heart needed at the time. And Lizzie, we heard that Lizzie was interested. And so we invited her out for a rehearsal and she came and she played everything just spot on. And she knew she's a big Heart fan, of course. So she knew all the songs ahead of time and she nailed everything. And within a week, she was doing a professional show for us for Boeing.
Company
that makes airplanes.
Yeah, way to bring things full circle, Steve.
Yeah. Well, you know, totally really cool. Lizzie is a gifted guitarist, keyboardist, vocalist, cute as a Bugsy or two, wonderful person to hang with. We've got Chad Quist on electric guitars, phenomenal musician. Of course, we have Steve Fossen, and we have Mike DeRozier, original Heart drummer. And I mean, to those out there listening, please don't miss. Do not miss. Check out the website. It's heartbyheart.com. Tour dates. You can get memorabilia there. They have a CD. You can buy a CD of Heart by Heart, performing all your favorite classic songs right there on their website and like their Facebook page too for updates. They're coming near you. So you guys back out on the road yet or gearing up?
Oh yeah, we booked a few gigs while we were walking around Disneyland. And we got home and another couple more gigs came in. So some for this year and some for even for next year. So, but you can't forget Summer Masick on Fleet Boat.
I was just going back.
If that was forgotten, there'd be something. I'd be in big trouble.
Yeah.
I'd have a lot of splaining to do. You got some splaining.
Exactly. We don't want that. We want to keep Heart by Heart together for the long as possible.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to be the one, you know, responsible for breaking them up. But yes, I was going back to Summer Masick. I mean, to take on those songs. And I remember her telling me, I'm the one judged the most, you know, in this band, you know, and it is so true. And man, she's got the chops. Summer Masick can blow it out and really, really pull those songs off.
Yeah.
And like I said before, you know, you're filling the void, you know, that's unfortunately, because of Ann and Nancy's dispute, you're kind of filling the void and playing those songs for the fans, which is great because, you know, especially in this these crazy times we live in, we need that music. We need that touch for youth to fall back. I mean, like with me, I just literally drove down the street, parked my car and went in, you know, for a couple of hours, I was able to kind of go back in the Wayback Machine, groove out, enjoy some great tunes. And, you know, hopefully you guys will come back to the Capitol Center sometime soon. And I'll definitely be there, or even, you know, somewhere close by. I'll be there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had a great time in that town. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Right next to the hotel was, I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but they were like a classic kind of like diner, but
Red Arrow? Upscale.
Pardon me?
Red Arrow, perhaps, or?
Maybe not. They were kind of like a it looked like it was a house that had been.
I'm trying to think what you're talking about. I'm not sure.
Anyway, so, and then we had a great breakfast down the street and, you know, great place. And afterwards, there was a pizza place and they took our picture outside. And it was really a lot of fun.
You know, this is normally the part where I ask you, you know, where we can find you on the internet and where can, you know, what are you up to? But Russ pretty much covered that, unless there's, you're working on some other side project that you want let people to know about or anything like that.
No, it's heartbyheart.com. Excellent. It has all the information you're going to need. You could, you know, like I said, you could download the CD, you could, you know, download some songs, who knows, whatever you need to do.
You can buy an autographed copy, or you can go and see Heart by Heart live, and they'll sign it for you right there on the spot.
Yeah, and when we do play live, we encourage fans, if they have old Heart albums or Heart memorabilia, we'd love, you know, Mike and I'd be glad to sign any of it.
Excellent. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Steve Fawson, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to do this. This, you know, obviously it kind of elevates the show because you're the, like I was telling Russ earlier, you're the first ever rock star, bona fide rock star that's ever been on the show. So, and to, you know, have someone with such a great classic band come on and spend some time with us telling you, you know, sharing your memories, telling your stories, and, you know, kind of enlightening things and maybe, you know, clearing up some of the misconceptions about like the formation of the band, you know, can't get much better than that.
Well, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity to just tell my story. I mean, I tell people, you know, people that, oh, I'm getting too much attention. I wish I could just be left alone. I say, well, there's only one thing worse than getting too much attention, and that's getting no attention.
Right.
And so I'm happy that you guys are interested, and I hope so, you know, hopefully this will be put in, you know, on the internet and be available for centuries to come, that people can if they still love the music of Heart, they can say, hey, well, here's Steve Fawson talking about music of Heart, and see what he has to say.
Russ, obviously I have to thank you once again for setting this up. This is really, I mean, like I said, my motive was, well, I'll get with Russ. We'll talk some Heart for hours, and that'll be it. When, you know, and I had no idea or concept that it would bloom into this. This is a very happy accident, as they say.
Well, Russ has been a great fan over the years, and then when, like I said, when we met him, he was a great person to hang out with, and we enjoy his company, and I hope he enjoys ours. And
absolutely,
and he's been such a great fan that whatever, you know, if we can help him out or help his friends out, we'd love to do it. So happy to do it.
Say it's a pleasure. I truly mean it, and I mean anything to promote these guys. You know, I mean,
and I'll definitely put links to the website in the show notes when this episode goes.
Yeah, you know, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Cool. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, on that note, we end this very special episode of Mr. K Super Show. Tune in next time when it'll just be me and some ordinary person talking about something else.
All right.
Hey, and we can do it again sometime Mike involved.
Steve, I would love to. I would love to maybe get us all together and talk, maybe take one of the classic albums and break it down track by track, because that's another thing I do on the show from time to time. You know, we might pick Little Queen or Dreamboat Annie or something and go through it track by track, and you can share your memories. Russ and I can, you know, maybe chime in about what we like about it and whatnot.
Little Queen or Dog and Butterfly would probably be the best ones to.
Yeah, I love Dog and Butterfly. That's my favorite. So, yeah, absolutely. We should do this again. I would say sometime soon, because these days you don't want to say, well, we'll get together in a year from now, because, you know, who knows what will happen. But I mean, I hope Heart by Heart is still a going concern. You guys are playing, and I hope you come back to the Capitol Center or any place else in New England, really, that's, you know, within driving distance, because I'll be there.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you very much, Russ.
All right.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks,
Chris. Be safe, Steve. And we'll talk to you soon. Give my love to Summer. Take care.
I sure will. Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
You've been listening to Mr. K's Super Show. If you like what you heard, please write a review on Apple Podcasts and share it on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever social media you like. Thank you for listening to Mr. K's Super Show.